Hi, everybody. Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken back with you again. And we won't waste a lot of time with my fancy intros because there is much to cover tonight. It is part two of the discussion on the Fugitive 2000 program. If you want to participate, 800-407-KSAV, talk at ksav.org. And now on with the show, and let's go with Bobby Neer.
Thank you, Dave. 3 weeks ago, we began a discussion of the Fugitive 2000-2001. With new actors having been successfully chosen to play old parts, so indelibly etched on the memories of millions, the next decision is how to upgrade an old story into a new era. And for the most part, the producers managed to convincingly incorporate new gadgets into a 37-year-old story, from cell phones to computers. But the very essence of The Fugitive has always been the stories. And in this area, there is a mixed result. Stories involving Gerard and a long-winded explanation of why he is so obsessed go on too long. Kimmel's involvement with other people and their problems during his run look a little familiar. Something more emotional and involving for the audience is needed. But before we get there, I want to turn to Ken regarding something he has long complained about with the original series, and that is the lack of a detailed explanation at the start of how it all began. Once again, in the 2000 pilot, we just get some quick background images, but nothing really detailed. The two most striking differences are the portrayal of the Kimmel marriage as a happy one, and a physical confrontation between Kimmel and the new one-armed man just after Helen is murdered. It is an extended montage in the pilot from the original, but Ken, are you still bothered by this lack of detail? Or have times changed so much, and do we now know so much that we don't need a detailed background story? How'd you feel about it?
I was disappointed again with the opening. Gosh, all three fugitive, you know, series, or if you want to call it, have started off not the way that I prefer. You know, the original series just started off with the first episode. Kimmel gets off a bus. He's looking for a job, and he's a fugitive, but we don't know what happened before that. Then in the movie version, I mean, we get the crime right away. Harrison Ford's being interrogated, and then there's some flashbacks, and then we see him at the, you know, at the party, at the dinner, and then he's doing some work in the hospital, so that was all mixed up. And now with the new series, you know, if you're a first-time fan, I think you'd be confused with the opening. Correct me if I'm wrong. I last time I saw it was maybe about a month ago. But isn't the first scene the car crash?
Are you talking about the 2000 series?
Yes, the 2000 series.
Well, ask Kitty. She's got a better memory than I do.
Yes, yeah. It is. And we see Richard Kimball run. And, well, Gerard goes to stop him, but then he throws Gerard's gun away, and hence we see this, actually, I think, a very exciting chase in the woods. I mean, we never saw Barry Morse run like the way Michael T. Williamson was running in this series. And as we see this run through the woods, that's where we have the flashbacks. And I actually thought these flashbacks were quite effective. Because the one thing that the series, I think, did take for granted was that we all know the basic premise of The Fugitive. But I think in this first, like, 11 or 12 minutes of these flashbacks, you certainly get much more of what happened in the crime. You get much more of a feel for what their marriage was like. You get just so much more than you got in 4 years of the original series when it came to Kimball and his trial and the evidence and the one-armed man and his marriage. You know, you got to give them credit for that.
But I was disappointed, Kitty, because that's not how you start a pilot episode. I mean, Kimball and Gerard, there's a car crash. I guess Kimball escapes and off he runs. But what about the backstory? Now, you say the flashbacks, but I don't know. I think you need to open up your pilot episode with the best of what you've got. You know?
Well, I think that was the best, though. I mean, you know, because they really did hit on the high points, because, you know, the first thing you saw Kimball and his wife in a happy marriage. And then after a couple of scenes, then you see him, he comes home, and he gets attacked by the one-armed man.
Yeah.
And then you see the police have arrived, and they're taking pictures of the crime scene. And then you see Richard Kimball, you know, being questioned by the police.
Right.
And then you see him getting arrested by Gerard. And then you see the trial.
But it's all disjointed. It's all kind of just thrown in a big hoop, and you're just piecing everything together. I like something more consistent.
Yeah, I think Ken would have liked to have seen more of a trial. In other words, what really convicted him? Because, you know, we're just told that he got convicted, but we don't really know, you know, we don't know why, the exact details. I can live with it either way. It doesn't really bother me that much.
Although one thing about this series that they did do, even though they didn't show that in the pilot, certainly, though, in other episodes, when Gerard actually kind of questioned if he had looked at everything, it actually showed him getting the forensic report that showed that there was no, that it was only Kimball's DNA and his wife's DNA that they found.
I think in the second series, they were just, you know, I mean, the people who did the second series also did the feature film. So they were kind of assuming, look, there's been a first series, there's been a movie. We're not going to start from the beginning now and go through all that. I mean, you're probably here because you're familiar already with the story. Even people too young who weren't even around back when the series was on surely saw the movie, which was a huge hit in 1993. 7 years later, you know, it's like, oh, sure, you know what the whole deal is. You don't have to
I mean, there's lots of people, you know, who saw the movie and never even knew there was a TV series.
All right, let's move on to a different aspect of the new series that's really wildly different from the original, and that is delving into why Gerard is so obsessed with catching Richard Kimball. Now, in the original series, he was just a strict law and order guy. He said that, you know, that he's simply enforcing the law, and we accepted that. But for some bizarre reason, in the second series, they want to get behind the story here and find out if there's something more to it, and it turns out they make this convoluted story that they make up out of nowhere that Gerard had a first wife who died in a car accident that he was in with her. He survived. She did not. And we find out later, I believe, that it was a drunk driver and who escaped being charged with manslaughter or murder or whatever. And now Gerard has somehow transferred this anger onto Richard Kimball. I don't have a great objection to this story, but they started early in the series, and it runs from week to week to week to week. Every week you see a little bit more. You get a flashback to the car crash. The car is going down the road. The next week the car is going through the railing. The next week the car is in the water. Can't we just tell the story in 1 week and get it over with? Kitty, don't you think it was annoying to have it dragged out for so long?
Yes, it was. I mean, that is something that we all should have gotten all the details on by, say, the third or fourth episode. To have drug it on as long as it did, I think by the time they finally told us the whole story, the series was losing viewers, and I think the viewers who were left didn't really care that much, particularly when he decided to tell the whole story. He tells it to Matthew Ross, Helen's father, who he had just uncovered a murder-for-hire plot, which he didn't bother to arrest him on. He just decided to look the other way and use that toward the blackmail scheme. But it was not necessary to have it go on for as long as it did. And his reasoning behind it, I thought, made him look just that much worse as a cop, because anybody will tell you that if you're in law enforcement, you need to know which cases you got to walk away from, because you're not supposed to get personal. You know, and clearly this was something personal. It was very obvious that in the case of Gerard, chasing Kimball was his therapy. and it just didn't work, you know, particularly when he decided to blackmail himself into a promotion. That really turned the character of Gerard into a total scumbag.
Yeah, I think that in the original series, the producers did that old theory, keep it simple, stupid, just tell the basic story, because the audience is, you have a new audience, and they're just trying the series. They haven't decided if they're going to watch it or not. So if you start boring them, they're going to say, oh, boy, what else is on? Do I really have to sit through all this? Because I've gone through that with series that I thought I was going to watch, but it took them so long to get started. And they dragged it out in other areas that I got bored, and I said, you know what, it's just not worth my time. Ken, how did you feel about this little backstory here?
They did it differently in the new series with Gerard. You know, obviously in the original... They got him going a little bit, and then he wasn't seen for a while. With the new series, he's in the first episode, he's in the second episode, he's in the third, the fourth, the fifth, I believe. Maybe 10 in a row, if I'm right?
He was in a lot.
Yeah, he was in a lot of them. I suspect one of the reasons they did that was because they knew how much it burned out David Janssen to be in every single scene, so I think they were trying to be kind to Tim Daly.
Yeah, so that aspect was different from the original. And,
but just do it in one story if you have to do it. Don't drag it out.
Right, but you know what? They did delve into the family life of Gerard. You had his daughter, and then I guess...
Yeah, she was really annoying, too, yeah.
They had some friction there. That was okay a little bit, but yeah, I agree. That flashback of going into the water, I mean, once is enough. I think they showed the flashback of the water... 5 to 10 times, maybe?
Well, maybe not 10, but it was a lot of times.
Yeah,
you're really bored after a while about that. You just want to get to the point already. So that really, really disturbed me. So I don't know why they did that. Well, while we're still on it, they did do something with the new series that could never have been possible with the first series, and that was set up an actual website. Warner Brothers, which did the series, set up an actual website that you could go to about the series. Ken, did you ever go there when the series was on?
No, okay. I didn't. Did you?
Yes, because I met a lot of people there that I would never have
known. I remember I checked it out, too. It was actually called drrichardkimmel.com.
They turned into an episode, right.
Uh-huh. I was quite surprised when I found it. I was like, are you kidding me? There really is a website that says that?
What year was that? 2000?
Yeah.
2000, yeah. And I was very hesitant to do it because at that time I had only gone online in 1999, so I'd only been fooling around the Internet for a year. And I thought to myself, you know what, I'm not going to join a bunch of goofy groups that are all over the place because I'll never stay with it anyway. And I was very hesitant to do this. I thought, do I really want to get into this? It's got to be just advertising. But actually it was done very well. And I think that they probably had great hopes for it, that it was going to help the series survive if you could get a group of people together talking about it and posting about it and doing things like that. But it didn't really work, but it was an interesting idea, and I have to say that, I had I might not have created the group at all, the Fugitive Views and Reviews, if not for that. It gave me the idea to do that. So even though it didn't really help the series survive, it did, I think, create more interest.
All right. Why not? Let me take. I'm going to be a little bit early, but I want to comment here, Bob, that the idea of forming some kind of a group on the internet to discuss a television series like The Fugitive has to be one of the silliest ideas I've ever heard anybody consider. Okay, listen.
It's a real pain in the behind, too.
Well, we're going to take a quick time out a little early, and then we'll come back, talk some more. Part two of The Fugitive 2000, when we'll return here on Retro Radio.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Bowling Shoe Giver Outer.
Mr. Bowling Shoe Giver Outer.
Your tireless efforts keep our feet comfy and sanitized with mountain freshness.
Mountain freshness.
Instinctively, you match left shoe with right. Carefully placing each pair in its own tiny shoe house.
Check the number on the back.
One wrong move, and we're on the fast train to Blisterville.
Oh, yeah.
Is he a 9.5 or a 10?
Yeah.
You know. Why? Because you're Mr. Bowling Shoe Giver Outer.
We couldn't move without you.
So So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, mister, and know it's no accident those shoes are red, white, and blue.
No, we couldn't go without.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
All right, and we are back talking Fugitive with the Three Musketeers. And we'll get beyond now creating a discussion group such as, oh, the Fugitive Views and Reviews. Get back to talking serious stuff, Fugitive 2000, and let's pick it up again with Bobby Neer.
Okay, Dave. Maybe Timex watches take a licking and keep on ticking, but not Richard Kimball. So after four seasons, too many close calls to count, too many dysfunctional characters to digest, too many lovers to lament, and too many miles for one man, the time finally arrives to get to the truth. Did Richard Kimball kill his wife, Ellen, or not? Starting with our next show, we will begin an open-ended series of programs on the history-making series finale. By open-ended, I mean that we will discuss each act in order of the two-part finale, and we will pick up a discussion on the following program from wherever we left off, even if it's in the middle of a sentence. The Judgment Part 1 begins 3 weeks from tonight on Talking Fugitive. Now, we don't have time in the second half of the program to go through all the episodes, that's for sure. We touched on a few of them on our last program. One I wanted to bring up is, that's really my favorite, actually, or close to it, of the second series, and it's called St. Christopher's Prayer, which is basically simply a remake of the original series, a classic episode called Home is the Hunted, in which Richard Kimball goes home because his father is dying. This is a very good episode. It's filled with a lot of emotion, but the thing that really gets me is that Tim Daly shows outwardly much more emotion than David Janssen did in the original story, because David Janssen wasn't that kind of actor, as we've discussed many times. He was, it was all about facial expressions and body language and stuff like that. Tim Daly did it differently. He had great moments of anger in this story, but in St. Christopher's Prayer, he's very emotional as he says goodbye to his father. Now, at the end of the hour, at the end of the story, he's forced to leave. His father is still alive, but he's out in the street, and he sees a little article in the paper that his father has died, and he's out there alone in this dark, deserted street, and he starts to choke up, and he leans against the wall. And the episode ends with him absolutely in sobs. It was very touching. It really got to me. And I think that Tim Daly, if you had any doubts about whether an actor from a comedy series called Wings could get into something so serious, those doubts were certainly dispelled then. How did you feel about that, Kitty?
Oh, I thought it was very well done. Just for me, watching that series, the one thing that was very evident was just how Tim Daly brought this character of Richard Kimball to life and how he played the gamut of emotions. I mean, one of the big criticisms that I always had about the first series was that Richard Kimball never really seemed that upset that his wife had been murdered, only that he got blamed for it. Whereas in this instance, you know, I always thought Tim Daly, In so many of the episodes, you could just see that he was playing it from the standpoint of a man who was, you know, who was on the run, and he was grieving for his wife. And in fact, my favorite episode of the series is actually the one called DrRichardKimball.com, where he has a dream sequence with his wife, and he says to her, "From the moment you stopped breathing, I've had to defend myself, and I can't even stop and grieve for you." And, you know, that was, I thought that was some very, you know, intense stuff. You know, certainly nothing that you ever saw in the original series. You know, someplace that for whatever reason they never dared to go in the original series. But in this one just seemed, you know, Richard Kimball just seemed so much more human on so many levels.
Yeah, well, I think when you see him out there in the street crying like that, sobbing with nobody to turn to, then you really get the feeling of what it's like to be in that position. I mean, it's a terrible moment in his life, and he doesn't have any support whatsoever. It's absolutely awful. Now, the other episode that I thought was really fascinating was DrRichardKimball.com, named after the actual website because talk about things being changed. Of course, we have the internet around now, and for the first time, Richard Kimball has somebody on the outside other than his sister who can feed him leads if there are any, and that's Chuck Brixius. He is a computer nerd who's following the Kimball case. David Jansen never had the luxury of having anybody like that. Ken, did you like this idea of bringing the internet into it?
Yes, absolutely. I complained with the original series that there wasn't another character added. And with the new series, you know, this character, you know, kind of gave some life to the series. You know, they had that one episode, I forgot the name of it, where, you know, Tim Daly does visit him. And then he hides in the bathroom, and then Gerard...
That is DrRichardKimball.com.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you're thinking of a later episode where he's dreaming that... Are you thinking of the one where he's having the dream sequence where Gerard catches him?
No, Gerard does come to that
Oh, okay, then you're thinking of Dr. That's
house.
Dr. Richard.
Yeah, you think of the one where he actually goes there, right.
Yeah. And he hides in the bathroom, and then... I always wondered, I said this before, if that guy was going to turn in Kimball for some money, you know, $50,000, $100,000, but they never developed that. But I always had a suspicion about him. Did you, Bob?
Whether Chuck Brixius was on the level?
Yeah.
No, not really.
No, I never questioned it either because certainly the reward was out there from the get-go of the series, and if Chuck Brixius wanted to turn him in for money, he could have done it at that point when Gerard came to see him and Kimball was in the bathroom.
Yeah, I think they really bonded because, you know, it was sort of at least suggested that Chuck wasn't a normal teenager. He was very much a loner. And he was dedicated to being on the computer, and he didn't appear to have any friends around, and he could really relate to Kimball being on the outside. So because of that, I didn't really think that he would turn him in one day. It seemed highly unlikely. But this is an excellent way to bring the internet into the story, because God knows nobody ever heard of such a thing back when the original series was on. And now he's got somebody who actually feed him leads. If he finds out anything, it's not just a matter of Donna, him calling Donna and finding out that something's going on. So I really did enjoy that, and I think it's a pity because if this series had continued into other seasons, I think Chuck would have had a much bigger part. The other story that we touched on the last time we discussed this was, of course, the the original series, Kimball doesn't have that many love interests in this first season, but like in the original series with Karen in Never Wave Goodbye, he does have Jenny, and that's a major love story. And unlike the original series, because it's 2000, not 1963, there's even a fairly, for network TV, graphic sexual encounter. Pretty surprising, don't you think, Kitty?
Yeah, to a certain degree, but not that surprising since it is the year 2000. I think that particular episode aired in 2001.
Right.
And it is interesting from the viewpoint of the love interest, because the one thing about this Richard Kimball that was very different from the David Jansen Richard Kimball is that this Richard Kimball at times, I remember he rebuffed actually a woman who made a play for him in the third episode. He was a little more discerning on who he got involved with, it seemed. I mean, granted, David Jansen's character, you know, did rebuff some of the women that were just totally psychotic, but there were other women in there where you were thinking, what are you thinking here, Kimball? But in this particular case, he was really a lot more discerning. You really didn't see him have encounters from a love interest viewpoint that much. I mean, in that third episode, the woman he worked with made a pass at him, and he rebuffed her and just said, I'm sorry, you know, it's not you, it's me. And interestingly enough, we actually saw him have a would-be interracial relationship when he was in New Orleans.
That's true.
Nothing came of it, but, you know, he clearly was interested in this African-American woman that wanted to become a doctor. So that was kind of interesting. But then after that, you know, then you had Jenny. That was kind of, the, I guess you could say, that was the big love interest of the first.
Right.
The one
my point was
season.
That it wasn't so much hit or miss the way it was in the original series. It seemed to have a little more depth, these relationships.
Absolutely.
Whereas in the original series, you know, where you had a girlfriend, then you had another girlfriend, you had another girlfriend, and it got to look pretty silly. Now, we only have a few minutes left, but I don't want to miss skipping to the very end of the series, because it only lasted one season, to those last two episodes with the funny names, Thanatos and Goddardamarung.
Yes, Thanatos.
Actually, I went to an online dictionary, and that's not how they pronounced it.
Really?
Yeah, I tried several of them, because some of them you can listen to it, and everybody pronounced it Thanatos.
Oh, okay.
I didn't think it was that way either.
I'm not really sure what either one of those words mean.
Well, it says in Thanatos, it says in psychoanalysis, it's the death instinct as expressed in violent aggression. And isn't that the one where Kimball gives the one-armed man a lethal injection to drag him back to Gerard?
No, actually, that happened in the one before, Goddardamarung.
Oh, okay, I see. Oh, Goddardamarung came first.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I did the other way around. Ken, how about that? Weren't you shocked to see Kimball find the one-armed man in the strip club and actually beat the hell out of him?
You know, he was much more proactive, this Kimball. And I did like that toward the end of this first season. You know, he wasn't messing around. You know, he was looking for this guy, getting the clues. And then when he did, he kind of beat him up that one time. And then
he just beat him senselessly, and then he gave him an injection.
Yeah.
And this was actually something that I thought was very interesting, because I remember, you know, one of the big complaints we had about the original series in the episode of Clean and Quiet Town was that Kimball actually drug the one-armed man into the police station and says, "This man killed my wife." But in this instance, he actually gave the one-armed man an incentive to tell the truth, because he made the one-armed man believe that he had injected him with some kind of poison that was going to slowly kill him. And so it was basically a, you better tell them what you know. You better tell them the truth.
Yeah, doesn't he drag him into the bathroom?
Yeah.
Or he tacks him in there?
Yeah, he didn't drag him into the bathroom. This was actually also something really amazing. You know, he actually stalked him.
Right.
And then he laid in wait for him in the bathroom. And so the one-armed man was clueless. He was in the strip club having a great time. When he finally does go walk into the men's room, he just gets nabbed from behind, and Richard just beats him senselessly.
Yeah. Right, and then the one-armed man asked him what he's doing, and I think he just snarls in his ear, lethal injection.
Yeah.
Okay, one minute.
It was great. I mean, I thought it was just fabulous to see Richard Kimball get this angry. It was a long time coming.
But what about the end scene? We got to talk about it. What was that about?
I have no idea, because it just faded out, and that was the end of it.
But who is this guy killing Gerard, and then he goes in
I don't think he really killed Gerard. I mean, had the show come back, you would have found out Gerard was only badly wounded. But we'll never know. But I suspect that guy probably just, he was somebody obviously working for somebody else and had some kind of incentive to bring the one-armed man. You know, it was obvious that he and the one-armed man recognized each other.
Well, we'll never know, because they faded out to nothing, and the show didn't come back, and we're the only ones who care.
All right, and we are out of time, and while we still have a couple of seconds left, going to be a little bit of a break in the schedule. Am I right, Bob? We're going
to be 3 weeks. We'll be back in 3 weeks to start the series finale. Then we'll do two consecutive shows on that. And then we'll take 3 weeks off for the holidays, and we'll be back in early January to finish it up.
All right. So I hope all of the listeners will join us. That will be on December the 2nd.
We'll
pick up this discussion, Talking Fugitive, here on Sheravision Radio.